Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 585, recorded Tuesday, November 21st, 2017. Sous vide or not sous vide? MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com/MacBreak to save 20% off any order. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software used by over 10 million people. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/MacBreak. And by Jamf Now, Apple management software for Mac, iPad, and iPhone devices. Visit jamf.com/MacBreak to create your free Jamf Now account and manage your first three devices absolutely free. Time for MacBreak Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news from all around the world. Rene Ritchie is in Montreal, Canada. iMore.com is his affiliation. Hi, Rene.
I've got snow on the ground already, Leo. Winter is here.
Winter is coming.
Yes. Now it's here.
Wow. That's amazing. Yep. That's amazing. Yeah, it's pretty chilly here. We're getting down into the 60s now.
Huh. I feel terrible for you, Leo. How are you going to survive?
Actually, it was more like 48 the other night. That was really cold. Alex Lindsay also joining us from his jaunts around the world of the Pixel Core. Good to see
you. How's my Skype connection?
Your Skype connection,
pretty sharp.
As usual, perfection itself.
It's like I feel like I'm here.
Perfection
I feel like I'm in the room.
Itself. It's amazing. Yeah. And from the Chicago Sun-Times, the lovely and talented Andy Anatko. Hey, Andy. Good to see you.
Hello. Greetings from high lunar orbit from the crew of Apollo 14. Yeah, sorry about the link.
No, that's all right. The only reason I don't care that much is that most people listen to shows. In fact, I think I'm really kind of more coming to the conclusion that video was a bad idea.
Eventually, audio, it's going to come around.
As long as the audio is good. Well, you know, it's a time thing for most people. They don't have time to watch something. They have time
to format of the show
like this. It's just people talking, and they might as well just listen in the car, right? So nobody knows your audio is delayed. It just sounds like it's right on time.
I don't care. As long as nobody knows I didn't shave this morning, that's fine.
Actually, your audio, somebody's saying, and I think this is actually an accurate way of putting it, your audio is on time. Your video is off.
His video is fast.
The audio is perfect. All right. Not perfect. Well, maybe perfect. The best laptop ever made, Marco Arment. Did you read his piece about the 15-inch Retina MacBook Pro? It's ostensibly the 2015 edition, although you could still buy it in the Apple Store. No, no touch bar. It's missing some of the neat new features, but it is SSD. It does offer quad i7 processors, plenty of memory, and it has jacks. It has ports. Two. You like this one?
Yeah, I think it's the best.
The MagSafe.
I still have it. I'm using one right now.
Yeah.
In fact, there's newer ones out there, and I'm still using
full
that
size
one
HDMI. You still get Thunderbolt, which is nice. Two Thunderbolt. You get a SD card reader. Golly.
I think Apple would have been fine with the transition if they had just put USB-C on one side, just taking where the HDMI and the USB and the SD card are, and just made that you had two USB-Cs, and then left our other side at least for a version or two, left that other side there to allow people to kind of transition.
Other reason Marco likes it is it has a 99.5 watt hour battery. I did not know this, but the carry-on limit for commercial airlines is 100. Yep. So it's right just a skosh below the
Apple
maximum.
Apple doesn't make any that are over 100. I mean, this has got to be the
sometimes
one
you hear people complain, like, why don't they put more battery in a tablet or in a laptop? And legally, they would not be allowed to ship it to you if they did. So that's why sometimes there's speakers and things that take up space.
Yeah. So 99.5 watts. So you're getting good watt hours. You're getting good battery life, even though it's a giant screen. And I came, after reading this article, it was the middle of the night. I came this close to buying one. I thought, no, I can't. I can't bring myself to do it. I have.
Yeah.
But what the question really, the reason I bring this up, first of all, it's Marco, and I think he carries a lot of weight in the Apple world, is
What is Apple's going to redesign, I imagine, the PowerBooks, MacBook Pros this year, 2018, this coming year. What would they ever abandon things like the touch bar and say, you know what, we were wrong?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
I don't think they would ever abandon the touch bar. I think that they would have to keep it in as an option in the product line. My question is going to be, do they take a step back and return to at least the 2015, 2016 style keyboards? Do they take what they consider to be a step back and actually put a SD card reader and an HDMI port and a standard USB-A style port for USB 3 on the side of it? Because we've been over this time and time again, and I always hear from people who are very, very sad when they hear me say that the new MacBook is not a good computer.
But you're not alone. I'm glad that I'm no longer alone.
I'm glad that I'm no longer sounding crazy. But it's like I gave a talk last week. At PHP World, and I might be misremembering, but I mentioned in passing, I've talked about every single tech company that was out there and what's going well, what's going poorly for them, and I just made a comment about the MacBook Pro, and I think that was an actual applause break.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh God, the hate, thank you, give me your hate. It makes me more powerful.
Well, it's telling that Apple still sells this model. I mean, this really doesn't fit in.
Yeah. They have a tradition of holding on to the old one while they're doing the new one, often because government and other big businesses they certify from IT that yes, we will allow our people to put in a requisition for this computer. They will not have done that for the new model until they've had time to take a look at what it does. So that's one of the reasons why these things stay on the price list.
I say this as someone who I have both. I have the 2015 MacBook Pro, and I have the most recent MacBook Pro, and I literally never use the old one unless there's some obscure VPN I have to connect to. I like the new one better in every single way. But as someone who writes about Apple for a living and has an audience, it is unacceptable that half my audience really dislikes it. Not that they find it worse than the original, but actively hates the keyboard and hates the things. And that's a big problem because one person can like it or not like it, but you have to have a computer that you're selling to everybody. And I have to wonder if maybe when they move to Face ID and away from Touch ID, they can sort of call a mulligan and just say, well, because the reason the Touch Bar exists is in part for Touch ID, because they had to have a separate display that would show Apple Pay so that nobody could hack into it and mess around with the different number amounts. So that's all driven by the Touch ID and the T1 processor. And if you sort of pull that out and make it Face ID, you could say, well, we don't need this anymore, so we are going back to this. And oh, by the way, you know, we've heard you about the keyboards, and these have so much more area. And I think USB-C just didn't materialize the way Apple hoped it would. They hoped there'd be a huge amount of USB-C gear on the market, and it just hasn't. I think they have to realize that is a very stark reality as well.
Yeah, I doubt that they'll go back. I mean, the problem is it doesn't really matter. I mean, from a bottom line perspective, I mean, they want to keep moving the technology forward, but I don't think that they're going to bother to change their dies.
Plus, they're selling well. I mean, no matter what we say,
it's a different market though. It's a mainstream market. It's not, their professionals are not happy, and that's core to their business. That's core to their influence in their business.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people that I see that are using them are definitely folks that are managing people, not necessarily
manager books
in the trenches. Yeah. I mean, we've got probably, I don't know, we've got lots of these retinas, and they are workhorses. I mean, they have been on every continent and all kinds of hot, cold.
People, I would include myself, say it's the last use good MacBook Pro.
It may be the last one.
And it may be the last forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
that's so disappointing.
It's especially problematic because the only pros are a special breed. They're using apps that they're not focused on loyalty to a brand. They're focused really on here's how much time I spend and here's how much money I get paid or I earn for every hour that I spend. And most of the tools that they're using are actually either multi-platform or there is something just as good on the other side of the fence. So they're really in a position where if these people don't feel as though this last MacBook is just a freak outsider, oh, well, they made one crap MacBook. Okay, well, I'm sure they'll be back on form the next time. If they have been increasingly less satisfied with the MacBooks that they've been forced to buy over the past X iterations of buys that they've made, that's when they start to say, okay, I'm going to give up. It's stupid that every time I decide that, no, this isn't the year I'm going to buy a Windows notebook that has all the features I want, all the power I want, all the convenience that I want, and probably cost less money as well. No, I'm going to stick with my Mac. That's the day that they jump ship. Really, you have to be an Xcode developer to be in a position where you need a pro laptop and you have no option but to buy a pro MacBook.
Is the iMac Pro going to make pro? Let me ask Alex this, since you're the most likely to spend $5,000 on a new iMac. Is it going to make pros happy, and is it going to calm the waters?
I don't know if it'll calm the waters. I think what'll really calm the waters is a Mac Pro.
Supposedly in development. We know nothing about it.
You know, something that really looks like it. But I think this is going to, my guess is, and I have not heard, I don't have any inside information at all, but I think that Apple went to Pixar and said, you know, what would you guys use?
Yep.
And they gave them a spec, and then they built something to that spec. Because, you know, a company like a production company doesn't care, you know, the cost that we think about, $16,000 for a workstation, that's not a big deal because, you know, the most expensive thing is labor. You know, so it being fast and easy to use and easy to manage, those are all things that are very valuable to a production company.
This is such a beast. It would support 3 5K displays, the internal display and 2 external displays. That's a beast.
I can't wait.
And it's space gray, so you know it's expensive.
Yeah. And it's base model has 32 gigs of RAM, but you can get up to 128 gigs. Base model has 8-core Xeon processor, but you can get to 18 cores. Starts with a terabyte SSD, but you can go to 4 terabytes and on and on and on.
I mean, the bummer for me is that it's still on a Radeon. I mean, you know, I really prefer NVIDIA.
Everybody would. So tied to ATI. I don't.
Well, Apple wants to control the drivers, and NVIDIA wants to control the drivers, and that's why they butt heads. Because the problem is that a lot of the OS uses the drivers, and so the problem is that if NVIDIA got behind or something didn't work. It's not just your game doesn't run fast enough. The whole OS doesn't work, and that's Apple's issue and NVIDIA's issue.
And it's not like the windowing server isn't completely broken in High Sierra anyway on external graphics cards.
Yes.
Yeah. It does respond to the ports issue it has on the back
a lot.
All of those ports that should have been on the MacBook Pro. It's got 4 Type C ports, 4 Type A ports, both USB.
Yeah, they're not screwing around this time.
Yeah, it's got an SD card slot, and it's got a Ethernet jack that supports 10 gigabit Ethernet. Which, I mean, we have 10 gigabit Ethernet, but I don't. I wonder if even Pixar has 10 gigabit Ethernet to the desk. That is crazy.
Probably have fiber.
Yeah,
that is crazy.
A little bit of future proofing is okay in a $5,000 to $10,000 computer. Yeah, I would say
that's a good point.
And it's also important to say that the iMac Pro, they can really go nuts here because there still is the mid-range iMacs that are going to be available. If people want a more conservative design, if they want a more affordable design, the i7-based iMacs are still super, super powerful. They are workstations for people who do not work at Pixar. And for people who don't have, you know, at Alex level need for intensity, can do just fine with an iMac. And so it just gives them a top level option. I think that what Apple desperately needs to keep sight of is that, again, they're the only manufacturers of Macintosh computers. So they have to produce everything that is needed, not necessarily everything that users want, but every model that users need in order for this to be a vibrant portfolio of computers. So if they only have the pro level thing and then they've got $1,000 kind of crap computer but nothing in between, that's a bad thing for the foundation of the future of the Mac.
I would have never said this 5 years ago, but I really wish that they would license the OS and just let people build stuff
what we want. If all they did was allow it to be run in virtualization. If they were allowed to run in VirtualBox, even if it were for the OS is always free if you're running on a Mac hardware. For $100, we will sell you a version that is licensed to run or has the hooks to run in the VirtualBox environment, which is an open source virtualization tool. That would solve so many problems that so many people have.
I mean, the main thing is the hard part is that it would be, the only reason that we would want to have customization is for speed. So if the virtualization is slowing it down by even 10 or 15%,
you wouldn't get any hardware acceleration.
Sorry?
Is my guess. You wouldn't get any hardware acceleration is right. my guess, which would be a very different experience.
Yeah.
So, are we burying the stinger here if we don't mention the A10 processor in the iMac Pro?
That's actually where I was going next.
Okay. Awesome.
This is, again, Stephen Trotten Miller. Is that his name? I always get it wrong.
Trotten Smith.
And Jonathan Levin have once again parsed source code. and according to the Bridge OS 2.0 software package from Apple, it appears that the new iMac Pro will have its own A10 Fusion coprocessor. That's the previous generation processor in the iPads, and that's currently in the iPads. And why? Why, Renee, would it have an A10 processor?
So for a couple of reasons. So we saw this with the T1 in the MacBook Pros, that it allows Apple to create a secure environment so you can do things like Touch ID and Apple Pay without worrying about a lot of the hardware attack vectors that you have in a more traditional computing infrastructure like an Intel and OS system. And it's going to let them do secure boot on this, which probably is the inverse of what Alex wants with a free and open Mac OS. But it'll let them verify.
There is some concern that that would, like future versions of Mac OS, require this preventing Hackintoshes, for
right.
instance.
Yes. The hardware. The unfortunate
but
thing.
But
it sounds like they're going exactly the opposite direction of what we right. what we want.
It would also let them do things like handing over, because the Intel processors are still hungry. Even if they do a very good job of sleeping, they're still hungry. And you could offload a lot of tasks, including things like Yo Simbo instead of, you know, Siri right. thing, whatever. I'm not allowed to say. But you could hand that off. You could hand PowerNap off. You could hand all sorts of system processes off so that it would not have to wake up the big – and probably getting bigger, because, you know, there's a race now between AMD and Intel who can throw more cores and more threads at things without bringing up that big, hot, heavy processor and just do everything on a nice, cool ARM chip off to the side.
Yeah. Like here, yeah, but also it could. It's not a first step into an ARM Mac OS, though, is it?
They've had that for years. I mean, they just haven't pulled the trigger on it, and that would probably manifest not in an iMac Pro, but in a small MacBook where they could control the entire thing the way they do an iPad Pro.
Yeah. Although the only thing that kind of got my when I was reading the story that got my curiosity up is remember that this is probably going to be one of the most attractive things for Xcode developers to buy as their build machine. It's kind of interesting to at least think about
there have often been
complaints from developers about saying that there are things that they have to now find once or twice I've had to because I have a library about pretty much everything that Apple has made, or at the time I will have like a loaner of the new 17.2 inch iPad Pro Delta. Apple will not allow this person to deploy something in the App Store until it's been tested on real hardware, and no, the emulator will not work for these purposes, and so they need to get a hold of real hardware, stuff like that. And also, if in some again future proofing if you're spending $5,000 or $10,000 for a workstation, and let's say that you are inside Apple and you know that there is going to be something for which it's going to be really, really useful and helpful for a developer to be able to test against an actual iOS style processor, it might, for that reason and also all the reasons that Renee mentioned, it might be a good reason to let's round this up from $7,991 to an even $8,000 by including a $9 mobile CPU in there.
Well, and I if you were going to go to the processor, the smoothest way to do that would be to have it sharing the board and slowly taking processes over rather than trying to just do a big swap. Just saying. It would take years, yeah, but they have that.
I don't see Apple doing something like that. I find them more about trying to tail off dependency on the Mac, move more people to iOS directly, rather than try to move Mac on ARM. Although, for the first time the MacBook Nothing came on board, that it really does look like you take it apart and it looks like something that was designed to run off of an ARM or a mobile processor, because it's just such a tiny, it's like a phone style board that's running Mac OS. And it got my interest level up again about, hey, maybe they are really thinking about introducing a line of ARM-based Macs, either to get the price down or to give us the make sure we still get that 12-hour, 13-hour, 14-hour, maybe 18-hour battery life on a Mac instead of envying the 10 or 12 hours that I'm getting on my iPad.
There is an ARM chip in the MacBook Pro, but that's just for the touch bar.
The T1, touch ID. For Apple Pay.
And it'll be interesting to see how quickly with all of these we're going to get facial recognition. You know, it feels like it's
how fast can they make those sensors?
What?
Yeah.
How fast can they make those sensors?
Yeah. We have face, you know, we have Windows Hello, face recognition in Windows devices now. It works fairly well.
Right.
And that's where you do have to have a depth sensing camera. There is more than just the regular Logitech camera in there. Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting to think about the differences of what the security means on a desktop versus what it means on a phone. On a phone, you're worried about leaving this thing behind someplace, and then someone picks it up and now can do online banking from your device. You're worried about how you just leave the room and your kids make purchases. With a desktop computer, once they are physically in front of this screen, they kind of own the home. You're basically trying to mitigate the damage of what they can do now that they're sitting in front here and they have access to USB ports. And the idea of having Hey Shlomo working on the desktop, that's from my experience and from talking to other people, it seems to be the least useful place for one of these voice assistants when you're, again, sitting in front of a computer with a mouse and a keyboard. Maybe you don't necessarily need a voice assistant. What you need is a window that you can type commands into. It's nice, but you don't necessarily need it. Apple needs to have a cylindrical object sitting on a table that can respond to voice commands. And we'll get to that later on, I'm sure. It's not a really valuable thing to have. Oh, excuse me. It's not as valuable a thing to have on an iMac.
I guess I feel like
unless Apple's sort of working on something different, because they have their voice assistant on multiple devices, from your iPhone to your iPad to your Apple TV, eventually the HomePod, now with the Mac. And if you think about it the way you think of like a mesh router network, and you start having mesh assistants where you don't necessarily have to put them in every room, but you have multiple devices that can all do that voting process and determine it. Once you string those together, it could provide something pretty robust. That's fairly unique to Apple, because not many people have that wide array. I mean, Google probably, but not many people have that wide array of assistant devices yet.
Well, I think that there's a future where we're not using passwords anymore. And I think that being able to have biometric on everything that I own is something that is part of that future. Every time now you get used to using like your B of A app and putting your finger down or looking at your phone, and you just start thinking about how stupid having to type long passwords.
It's nice when your computer recognizes you and without a lot of effort logs you in. It's funny, because for years with phones we had to type the code.
Right. It was just like animals.
Along comes Touch that, ID, and now it's just we just expect to use it right away.
I finally got my 10, and I didn't think that the Touch ID. I thought that Renee was overstating the whole, like, oh, it's a pain, you gotta put your finger down and everything else. It is. I still have my 7. I'm still like on my way
I'm
out.
Back on the Pixel today, and I'm like I gotta put the fingerprint thing because I forgot it existed. Like I got to the point where, not always, but often enough, I forgot I was actually doing authentication.
Right.
And now I'm doing it again each time.
Right. So
make sure we think kind of big about this, though. I was like, on a desktop, imagine, you know how you're not supposed to, but you see the verification checkbox on Twitter and other social media services saying that this is definitely Andy Anatko's account, because we've proven this is who he is. So now you can also do a Google search and find out more about this person who's saying such nasty things about Star Trek 3. Imagine something similar to that. If there were a broad standard for like 3D Face ID, so that not by logging in or anything, but just by the fact that I'm sitting at the computer and my Twitter client or my Instagram client or my Facebook client will put like a purple checkbox simply saying that, oh, by the way, via Face ID, we have authenticated that the person who said this is Andy Anatko, definitely Andy Anatko. So that would sort of obviate people trying to be trolls on the internet, political parties trying to pretend to be somebody else. I'm not saying it would be a bad, it's a stupid thing to have Face ID on a desktop, but the cool stuff is going to be stuff we can't really think about right now. It's going to be the stuff that makes us really realize exactly how we can improve the world by making sure that fools have to stand up and say, yes, I be that idiot. Well,
and I totally get that there's a value to anonymous being able, you know, especially in oppressive regimes and so on and so forth, being able to say things anonymously, whether or be able to do it as a whistleblower. Like, there are reasons to have anonymity, but we manage a lot of events, a lot of big events that have a lot of comments, and we have to manage them on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, like all these other things. And the difference between Facebook and YouTube are dramatic, because, you know, the YouTube comments are just useless. I mean, because it's all anonymous. And so you just have, I mean, the most vile pile of horrible nuclear mess on a big event in YouTube, to the point where most of our clients just turn it off. And Facebook, you can actually, I mean, there's some rough comments, but nothing like what you see when people don't have any responsibility.
Authentication's a big problem all around. And it is interesting. I think you've already made a step in that direction, though. I mean, it's even with Touch ID, the fact that you could buy stuff at the Apple Store and Touch ID to authenticate was Apple's way of doing it, at least internally.
Right.
And I'm not sure when this emerged. Is it maybe with the iPhone 10 and Face ID? But I noticed that now when I log into apps and I log into websites, Apple offers to save the password in the keychain. Is that new, Renee?
Yeah.
When did that start?
So that started before, but you would have to you couldn't authenticate to do it. You would have to do it manually. And they thought that Touch ID was kind of too slow for that process.
Ah.
But with Face ID, they thought it was fast enough that they would just autofill it for you.
It's very
automatic. As long as they could register Face ID.
And that's the beginning, I think, of this Face ID authentication. But it's only on the iPhone right now. But I
was shocked by it because Joanna Stern posted her review and I hit the link and it took me to the Wall Street Journal login page. And I wasn't expecting anything. I thought I would have to start typing it in. And it did the little spin around, filled it in. And I was at the review.
Yeah.
And I just tweeted her back going, what happened?
It's so awesome. So you have to give permission to record the password the first time you log in, right? And from then on, it will store. You just have to. It'll say, do you want me to save this in keychain? And you say yes.
So it's important to realize one thing, though. So I never use iCloud Keychain because it doesn't have a master password like LastPass or 1Password. And I never wanted to be in a situation where at a conference or at an emergency, I handed somebody my phone and suddenly they had my credit card data.
Exactly.
And that hasn't changed, but it will do Face ID. So what I've done is I sort of bifurcated. And now all my really important secret stuff is still in 1Password. But I don't really care if someone else logs into the Wall Street Journal.
Exactly.
So anything that I consider to be trivial, I now put in iCloud Keychain.
Plus the fact that it's backed with Face ID makes me a little bit more reassured. By that because I started using it for exactly the same reasons. I don't use 1Password, I use LastPass, but I had the exact same thought in my head. Well, I'll do this for non-critical passwords because it is so damn convenient. Just go, Wall Street Journal. I'm already in.
And you're right in.
Yeah. Interesting article in the Apple Machine Learning blog, Machine Learning Journal, about how Face ID works. They're using an on-device deep neural network that was originally created in an academic environment. And I forgot the name of it. They say it down here. But this is really Overfeet. Overfeet. Mm-hmm. O-F-E-A-T. This was popularized some simple ideas that showed DCNs to be quite efficient at scanning an image for an object. So this is academic research, and now they're applying it. If you're into machine learning, I think this would be probably a fairly interesting article to read about how this all works. Apple's a little peek inside the kimono about how they're doing this. And it does, you know, Renee, am I right? This is how it's learning to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this when you stop to think about it, again, like when they're describing it, it's less like coding a machine or coding a computer and more like training a pet, which still scares me. Because if the Terminator came back now, he wouldn't have to go to a phone book and say Sarah Connor. He would just sort through quickly Instagram, learn what her facial features are, start scanning for gait analysis and walk right up to her.
Right.
So, I mean, like,
Sarah Connor, come with me.
Yeah. Totally. They really are learning and improving. And I think after you let them loose, you're no longer responsible. They start to improve faster than you actually realize.
Yeah. It's really so good article, machinelearning.apple.com if you want to read more.
I really thought it was interesting about the heavy server, you know, the idea that you use heavy iron to get most of the work done and then just hand off the mostly. It's like basically I thought of it as like pre-cooked meals.
It did point out though that because Apple's iCloud photo library is cloud-based and due to Apple's strong commitment to user privacy, we couldn't use iCloud servers for computer vision computations because they encrypt the data before it's sent to cloud storage. So bringing deep learning-based computer vision solutions to our customers, we had to address directly the challenges of getting deep learning algorithms running on the iPhone. And that is
they have the advantage. To, like their biggest, like Google for sure, and Amazon, their biggest advantage are the servers. Apple's biggest advantage is the silicon. And you look back at it, and they were building the neural networks 3 years ago. I mean, they started that project. And I was like, again, I'm living on the. I said this before the show, but I'm living on the Pixel 2 XL this week. And there's just little things I noticed. Like when I pulled up the phone and I went to portrait mode, I thought it was broken because I didn't see anything different. And it took me like 10 minutes to figure out that I took the picture, then went to photos, then opened the photos, waited a few seconds. It would look at the photo and apply take the depth mask and apply the blur, but it wasn't doing it in real time. And that's the sort of thing that Apple can do on the device in real time in the photo viewfinder. And that's the same thing that's letting them do, like, it's not anywhere near a giant server cloud, obviously, but it's powerful enough that they can do the facial recognition locally and provide the privacy.
That's what a lot of this article is about, is how you solve those problems, because you can't use Big Iron. To do it on, you have to use on the phone resources. Let's take a little break. Come back with more. We will talk about the HomePod now delayed, and actually, Mark Gurman's amazing story of how the HomePod happened, almost didn't happen, and a whole lot more. And of course, this just happened this morning. The FCC has announced its plan on repealing net neutrality, and we'll talk a little bit about what that might mean. And that's something everybody's a little bit nervous about. Our show today brought to you by The Tracker. If you ever lose stuff, you're going to want to find thetracker.com/MacBreak, because it is, and by the way, the website's harder to find than actually anything else after you get The Tracker, thetracker.com/MacBreak. The Tracker is a small coin-sized device. Actually, there's two of them. There's a Tracker Bravo, anodized aluminum, size of a quarter, very lightweight, and then the new Tracker Pixel, which I really like. It has LED lights in it. It's the smallest Bluetooth tracker ever made, lightest, and it really is great because you can put it on your wallet, you can put it on your keys, you can put it on your remote, you can put it on your bike, you can put it in your luggage. You can put it, it's so small, you can put it anywhere, and I have it on my keys, and I love the fact that it lights up, because how often is it that you drop your keys somewhere dark, like in the couch cushions or in your car, and those lights make it really easy to find. Separation alerts mean if you leave your phone behind, your keys will howl at you. If you leave your keys or your tracker behind, the phone will howl at you. You can even press a button on the tracker that has an instant Find My iPhone that'll make the phone ring even when it's silenced, and vice versa. Whenever you leave your tracker attached backpack, let's say, behind, you can look at the map on the app and see where it saw it last. And if somebody should take that backpack and move it, they have the world's largest crowd locate network, which is amazing. Anytime anybody with the tracker software walks by your tracker, it'll ping you and say, your tracker was just seen here on this place on the map. So it makes it possible, since there are 5 million trackers out there in the world, it makes it possible to find a misplaced item almost anywhere in the world. Don't worry about losing anything ever again. You could find it with the tracker. And by the way, Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee means you have nothing to lose. One of the things I really like, unlike some of these other Bluetooth devices, the battery's replaceable on both the Tracker Bravo and the Tracker Pixel. So it goes and goes and goes, and then you put a battery in it, it goes and goes and goes some more. Pick your color, pick your tracker, and then take 20% off your order, however large, thetracker.com/MacBreak, thetracker.com/MacBreak for 20% off your order. What a great holiday gift. If you're giving expensive devices for the holiday season, put those in the stocking. Those are great stocking stuffers. thetracker.com/MacBreak. Ah, HomePod. It ain't going to come out in time for the holidays.
Womp, womp.
Womp, womp. Early 2018, according to Apple, a brief statement said that the production process needs a little more time.
Yep.
We'll start shipping in the U.S., U.K., and Australia early 2018. I don't even know when that is.
Before June 30th, I think, in U.S. Samoa. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that the dateline?
It could be as late as that. Why is it held up? What? How hard can this be?
If you look at what has come out, so Siri kit for HomePod has shipped. That is done. And my understanding is all the Siri stuff is done. But AirPlay 2, which is a big part of this because it has no auxiliary port in it, everything has to be streamed over AirPlay 2. AirPlay 2 was briefly in a beta, but it hasn't been in the most recent betas, and it's not out yet. And if you start looking at everything that's involved, because AirPlay 2, the original AirPlay, there are rumors that it was like a weekend project, and some people say that's true, some people say it's not. But either way, it was something that could just very quickly move audio and video signals around, but it was never robust. And AirPlay 2 is much more robust. It's better protected. It's more reliable. It's got a much bigger buffer. And it also does multi-room, which is something the original AirPlay didn't do, and something that a lot of people really wanted it to do. And that has not shipped on iOS yet. So, and that's a huge part of HomePod. So I would think that that is probably the reason why. Well, that and everything that is associated with it is probably the reason why.
That makes a lot of sense. That's hard stuff to do.
to do in a way that won't get you in a lot of bad reviews.
Right.
Yeah, I think, but I think it also kind of points to a really bad organizational problem at Apple. We've had a consistent thing that that I've been hearing about and that we've been seeing like in the actual field is that there is the stuff that Apple's focused on, and then there's the stuff that they have to make time for. And so you don't have the organizational structure you have at some other companies where you might have like, here is our home entertainment speaker division, where the most important thing they feel they're doing in the entire year is shipping out this new smart speaker. Whereas with Apple, one of their greatest strengths is that they have a very holistic view of the company. They're making one product, which is the Apple Omniverse. But the thing is, it's once you have the favorite child, the iPhone 10, that has a big math exam and they're really stressing out about it. Now, well, mom and dad both have to make sure they buckle around the iPhone X to make sure it's happy, make sure it gets released. The other kids have to get ignored for a little bit. I'm sorry for a tortured analogy, but that's really the best way of doing it as a youngest child in a large family. I know all about being ignored in favor of more favorite children. And it's really embarrassing for Apple to make such a huge announcement at WWDC. And apparently you would do it only when you're pretty sure about your timetables and not being able to even commit to, oh, it's going to be delayed until we're taking pre-orders now, but won't be able to ship until January 18th. The fact that there is no date for it, the fact that it is, we are going to give you until, we're going to give you a date that's, it could be anywhere up until June, says that, wow, a lot of organizational stuff went horribly, horribly wrong in order for a mistake of that magnitude to happen, especially in, I'll end it here, with a product that was just locked and loaded to make to sell 10 times as many as they could possibly take orders for. You're talking about a cool looking Apple speaker designed by Apple that looks really cool, that makes incredibly good music, that is semi affordable for an Apple product, and it's going out for sale right before during the holiday buying season. Oh my freaking God, that's like jumping out of the airplane and then, well, I did strap something on. Let's just see if it's a parachute. You don't make mistakes like that.
The only mistake that Apple made was announcing it, in my opinion. I mean, the issue is that, I mean, all of these companies are have trouble getting products out the door. So they all have timelines that are moving. They all have things that they were sure of that they're no longer sure of. That is what all these technology companies are doing all the time. Is those they have things that stretch out by months or weeks or years or decades. I mean, they have all kinds of things that aren't working and little glitches and I've been developing a piece of software that was supposed to take a month and it's now a year into it. That's the stuff that happens.
You can't just throw money and more developers at a problem like that.
No, because it's a handful of people that are thinking through it. And so you can't adding more people just makes it more complicated, because now you've got a bunch
people
of
people say, well, Apple's so big, they have so much money, they have so many people, they should be easy, but it's not.
The reason that some people get paid a lot of money at these companies is because
some programmers are a lot better than others.
We talk about a lot of like the actual, like if you're doing, let's say, compositing or whatever, in let's say it is not the skill set of me doing what I need to do that is not hard. It is seeing the difference between what's good and bad, seeing the difference between what should be there and shouldn't be there. And there's a handful of people that do that well. And as you said, there's a handful of people that program well or not, and the number of people like finding someone who's a good programmer, finding some programmers is one thing, finding good ones. If you're good, you don't worry. Like the guy who complained about Google's, policy, I bet you he had a job regardless of, quietly somebody hired him probably the week he walked out, because there's so much demand if you're a strong programmer or a mediocre programmer. That it's a limited
supply.
Also
the mythical man month problem, which is even if you could get a programmer that's that good, you can't just throw them into the mix and say, okay,
no, absolutely,
this is going to make it twice as good.
No, I mean, if you every person you add
down.
Might slow it down and may increase it by 10 or 15%. Right. I mean, that's the reality because, there's just more pieces. And I think that
that's an interesting point, though, that the mistake made was merely announcing.
Just announcing it. I mean, they could have come out with it next year. I think the problem they feel is as it said in the article, they felt blindsided by the echo.
And there were a couple of things I found out. This is Mark Gurman's reporting, which coincidentally came out, the same day Apple announced it was going to be delayed. Wonder who was his source. In any event, this was originally prepared as a speaker. They heard the echo. They got the echo. the day it came out, and they said, you know what, the speaker's not good. We could make this with a better speaker. We got Siri. We could make this with a better speaker. So it was really about audio quality initially, and less about the Siri ecosystem. At one point, there was one that was 3 feet tall.
Right.
Three feet tall.
And here's the
problem. I bet that speaker sounded good.
No, there, I mean, there were a ton of pros. So this has been like Apple's been working on speakers for a long time. We saw one with iPod Hi-Fi, but they always have these projects.
Right.
And they do tons of prototypes. The reason they have a lot of those machines is so they can spit out endless. Like we saw Johnny Ive have every eighth of an inch size iPhone to figure out the two you actually wanted to ship.
And this was a side project initially as well, right?
It's a company they have so much money and so many creative people that anything that we could dream up, they have the resources to prototype.
Mark says they wanted to beat Bose. They wanted to beat JBL. They wanted to beat Harman Kardon. It wasn't merely
Siri was
at
incidental at first.
Yeah,
it was just a convenient way to control it. And then when this started becoming a category, you have to rethink how important Siri is to the overall product, and they were still, for various reasons, still focusing it as a speaker. But if there is a knock against Tim Cook here, it's that not just that they announced it early, but there is a theory in Wall Street there's a theory that he feels pressure from Wall Street because they keep saying Apple's not innovating and Apple is behind, and it's not true. Like the Apple Watch didn't have to come out when it did. The watch market was nascent. The home assistant market now, there is an incredible reality distortion in America because you're lucky to have so many of them. But the international market for home assistants is tiny and very immature right now. So there's no reason to rush this to market. There's no reason to announce it. But the knock on him is that he feels so much pressure by Wall Street in these questions, like why isn't Apple in this category, that they do announce these things early. And then you end up waiting for Apple Watch when it does come out. There's not enough supply. You end up waiting for a HomePod or AirPods. And when it comes out, there's not enough supply. And that's exactly what Alex and Andy are saying, that it becomes a complete perception issue that is almost entirely self-created.
Under development before it actually even became an official project.
Right.
It's run now by the former R&D chief at Bowers & Wilkins at B&W, which makes some of the best speakers in the world, Gary Gives. And 2 years ago, it got its own location. And by 2016, they were testing the device inside homes of employees not connected to the audio development. Well, it's interesting. And they tried it. It was the beam forming was a big part of it. Can we make great speakers
had that for years in iPhone. They announced that with the iPhone 4.
Has Echo, as has Sonos even has beam forming in some of its speakers now.
Well, I mean, that's why I think that Apple, I don't think they were necessarily wrong to announce it at WWDC if they were completely confident they were going to make the date, because they are getting in really late to this market. It is vibrant. They're selling like hotcakes.
And
everywhere.
The competitors are not sitting back and waiting.
No,
for
I
Apple.
Asked a bunch of analysts. It's not vibrant though. It's very small. It doesn't make a lot of money yet. It's not really a market that Apple would typically enter.
Right.
Yeah, but 50 million is like million, Apple Watch is bigger than that, and that's considered a failure.
If I sell 15 million units of something, I'm really happy. It's not everybody has to be Apple. Apple didn't have to get into the space, but if they were going to get in the space, if they're going to lay claim to somebody's $350 for some sort of an audio product, they are going to have to make sure that, again, if they went around the room and said, look, we're going to go through every single one of you and you're going to say go or no go. Are we going to be able to ship by the end of the year? And if the consensus is that, yes, we can ship this HomePod by the end of the year, it's a really good. If they're going to sell it anyway, you'd better say that. By the way, if you're going to be spending $350 on a Sonos product or on a Bose product or in someone else's product, maybe you want to put that money aside for our product, which is not ready yet, but it's definitely going to be shipping. The thing that I got out of Gurman's article is that it feels as though this is a case of Apple being way too precious about the design for this thing. I think that the Apple Watch is a really great example of how you don't have to get it all perfect in the first go. It was really terrible. The hardware was always wonderful, but the software had no sense of identity. It had no point of view. It was confusing, not just confusing for a wrist-top operating system. It was just it made me wonder, did the people who designed this know that this is going to be worn on a watch and operated with a fingertip? It was so bad, but it gave them time to do a couple of iterations to dial in on exactly what people wanted these for. And you don't know what people are going to buy something for until you make it available for them to buy and then watch them use it.
It also might be a little gun shy after the failure of the Apple Hi-Fi. That was $350.
That was ages ago. That was somebody else. But I'm saying that the fact that Apple didn't immediately notice that, yes, the Amazon Echo doesn't have a great speaker, but people are not spending $150, $200 for a tiny little tabletop speaker that is going to take the place of their Stonehenge speakers and their 5,000 watt amplifier. It's something they're going to put in an office or in their kitchen. And the fact that they could set timers with it and do 5,000 things with it, that's why people are buying it. So it always seemed to be interesting from the get-go that they were not saying, they're kind of skipping over the reasons why people are using Google Home, the people why they're using Amazon Echo, and they're saying, don't buy $200 speakers that will definitely fill the room with beautiful sound. Buy this one little grapefruit-sized speaker because it's way, way cooler, but it will also do automation, it will also improve our lives. No, but imagine the sound you'll get from this little grapefruit-sized speaker. And again, I don't doubt that it is wonderful sound, but that's not why I buy a $300 speaker. It's why I buy two Amazon Echoes. It's why I buy three Google Homes.
I think that you kind of need it to be that, though. I think it needs to be a great speaker because, I mean, I own a Google Home and I own some Echoes and I have a, you know, the little screen one. What are they called? The Show. And the thing that I think is funny is they're putting all this work into Siri and I, you know, I don't need that or necessarily want it. I won't put it in my office. You know, I don't put any of those things in my office. I mean, I'm not going to discuss things
but
in front of
them. They're focusing on being a good speaker, which none of those devices
are. That's what I'm saying. Like, they're very useful. My wife uses them. My kids use them all day.
But people don't care, Andy?
No, I'm saying once you start spending $300 or $400, there are a lot of really awesome PC type speakers and Bluetooth speakers that cost $300 or $400, and they don't do it by beamforming. They do it by often having two discrete speakers you put in two different corners of the room, and they don't actually take. They take up even less space than the HomePod. I don't think Apple's being stupid for pursuing this line of view, but it would have been more interesting in hindsight if they said, let's just have a really good Apple design speaker. Doesn't have to be the greatest, but it will be shipping and it will be very good. And over the course of the next 1 or 2 years of having to endure pundits like Andy and the rest of the people on blogs and stuff saying, oh, look how badly this – okay, I would never complain about how badly something is selling. But just for example, we'll have to endure a couple of years of pundits talking about how badly it's selling, what a disappointment it is, until we have that eureka moment after looking at how people are using this. And we'll do not even new hardware, but new software that gives it complete and utter devastating relevance.
And I think the watch market is also, you come back to another good example of Apple got in late on that one and then just took over. You know, I mean, like there was a lot of watches out there that were doing relatively good. And then.
Well, let's not forget that the AirPods are Siri enabled. And they are pretty good speakers. They go in your ear. They don't fill the room. Any of you, I'm curious, tap your ears and have use Siri on your AirPods?
Yeah, it has more options than iOS 11. Well, no, but I mean, like with iOS 11, it has more options. Like you can have it do skip forward and skip backward. And I turn it on to those just to try it. And inevitably, I want to do something else, and then I can't.
Have you ever sent a text message from your AirPods?
Yeah, sure. Okay. I use them when I'm walking and stuff. And if people send it, I just tap it instead.
Yeah, I never do it. And I think Siri has gotten much better in iOS 11. I'm a little more likely to use it, although.
My only problem with it, Leo, is like, remember the old days when you had server farms and once in a while it wouldn't work and it's because you hit one server that was out of date or was down? That's what Siri always feels like. I can tell it to turn on my lights 10 times and 8 times it'll work fine and 2 times it'll say, sorry, we can't turn on lights. I'll be, what do you mean? I mean,
you're
turning them on every day.
you turned them off.
And it feels like I'm hitting that one server that just is down. Or is this not been updated?
Well, it doesn't take many of those experiences to sour you on the whole experience. I'll tell you why this has come up for me, because I got the Google Pixel Buds, which, by the way, are an insane disappointment.
I have to get them anyway. But
there's a good argument for not releasing something on time.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what's happened. Mine have stopped pairing. I can't pair it to anything. I guess they broke. I don't know. Right. I used them once. But the thing that was interesting, and I did try for a day wearing them all the time, and using them to connect with the assistant and sending texts. Right. And when you get a ping on your phone, when you get a notification of any kind, it reads it to you, gives you a chance to respond. And I found that a very interesting case for wearables.
Well, I think
useful, but I haven't done that.
Don't wait
with
the AirPods. Translation. Answer the question.
The translation is a problem because it's just a problem. It doesn't work very well.
I think that when you look at some of the patents that Apple, you know, pushed forward and what other people are working on, I do think that
they fixed Bluetooth, and everything that's wrong with the Pixel Buds has to do with Bluetooth, frankly.
But I think Apple is moving. They're going to release in the next 2 to 3 years a earbud that is designed for you to just leave it in your ear. Like, it's just, you're just going to put them in, and it connects you to the rest of the world. Yeah. It connects you to your
system. And that's kind of what I wanted to do and was doing for one day they worked with the Pixel Buds. And that was actually, I was at the airport picking up my son, and it was very useful. You felt like you were connected. You didn't have to pull your phone out of your pocket.
Right. Motorola had a product called the Motorola Hint that was it was a Bluetooth earbud, but it wasn't stereo. It was only one, but it also came like the AirPods in a charging case, so you could wear them all day. Yep. And it really hid itself very, very nicely. There weren't any antennas, little stubby antennas sticking out. It just sort of like, you know, spackled over the loops and the whirls of the inside of your ear, so you really didn't know that someone was wearing one until they turned and looked this way. But it's in addition to being able to take calls with it, it really was just a sensitive touchpad, so you can tap it and then talk to Motorola Assistant or what would then become the Google Assistant. And when I was trying it, it really was one of those things where I wasn't a human being. Because human beings like have earwax, and the idea of wearing this thing every single day and having to clean it like every day or something because to make sure it doesn't look quite so nasty, because it was super convenient to just be taking your constitutional and not having your sound field cut off by headphones, but still be able to tap and say, when is my sister's birthday? Because I'm passing by a floral shop. I don't know. I want to make sure it comes on the 20th and not the 22nd. And then just get these incidental things, that little bits of information that smooth your day, or taking little notes without having the cost of having to divert your attention to looking at a phone, or even be wearing these stereo headphones all the time. It's a great idea, and I hope that other companies pursue it.
I'm surprised
my
that
neck
Apple
hurts
hasn't.
Next, because like when I look at the screen, my head's down, and it starts to hurt after a while when I'm walking. And now with the AirPods or others, I just leave my head up, phone's in my pocket, and I feel so much better.
I'm surprised that Apple hasn't bought a company like Phonak, like just bought the whole company.
They're a hearing aid company, very high-end hearing aid company.
Yeah, we use them in broadcast, the wireless ones. What you see them in like 24, like Jack Bauer puts them in his ear. Now, they don't work for miles. They work for 100 feet in studios. But they're so good. Yeah. And you just feel like, you know, they're not stereo. They're not like music quality. but when you think about what they've gotten really good at is being able to isolate, you know, all that stuff and actually improve that. And if you look at the audience that Apple continues to look at is many of us that are aging that are going to need to have augmented hearing. I think that there is a massive market. If you look at the health market in general for Apple to get into I think that Apple's going to move towards a hearing aid that is not a hearing aid. You know, they make it cool. You know, it's going to be an insert that you can hear better than you ever did, as well as have music, as well as have assistant, as well as have, and it'll be certified and, you know, all those other things. But Phonak's probably the leading one. They do everything from hearing aids to security to intelligence to, I mean, they have a lot. They actually have whole different websites. If you look at it, there's whole different websites for the different industries, you know, that they cover.
Yeah.
And so, like you would, if you go to the Phonak one, all you see is hearing aids, but there's a whole other one that's all entertainment, and there's a whole other one that's all, you know, defense.
Yeah, I'm looking at the wrong products, obviously.
I'll see what you're
Government services. So go to the government services page. Hearing instruments, wireless accessories. Yeah, those are the little bottom ones are just the ones that just sit in the ear. The nice thing about the ones that are more hearing aid like, I actually have Starkeys, which look very similar, is that you can have a lot more room for the battery that goes behind the ear, and then there's just a little implement in your ear, a little floating little speaker. Apple has been served with a warrant to unlock the Texas shooter's phone. Turns out to be an iPhone SE, blood-spattered iPhone SE. Apple has yet to officially respond to the warrant from the Texas Rangers. That's an encrypted phone.
Which an encrypted phone, which they sent back to Quantico without doing anything with it. So they said,
yeah, they didn't put it on his finger. Right. Or
well, you kind of understand them doing that. Anyway, the real question, I bet, is if this warrant covers just the phone, or I'm suspecting it covers the iCloud backup as well. It does. And that would be, of course, where you would find the data if you're really looking to something.
Yeah, I don't think this is about this case. I think that, remember, the couple of weeks ago, a deputy attorney general on address was pretty much calling out Apple particularly and sending signals, if not saying outright, that they were looking for something to make a test case out of,
yeah,
to say that, look, you do not have the right to conceal a secret from the government. And that if you are manufacturing technology that allows people to conceal a secret from the government, you must have a back door in there. And I think he even made the statement, I'm probably paraphrasing here, that no rational person would deny that the law enforcement has a right to the data inside a phone. It's like, yeah, me? Maybe I'm not rational, but I think you don't.
What really undermines the argument is the NSA leaks mixed with the fact that the San Bernardino shooters had no data. Like, after they actually broke it in, there was nothing there.
They got into it for $1 million, and
there was nothing there. And
although
NSA has proven they can't even keep their own secrets.
In this case, we know at least he called his father. We believe he also might have called other people from that phone, those call logs. But they can get that from the phone company, so I'm not sure what – I don't know.
Yeah, we also can't gloss over the fact that Apple is willing to help law enforcement up until almost the very, very end of their abilities. And the only thing they're not willing to do is do something that they feel compromises the security of every iPhone everywhere.
Right.
And they are, particularly as Alex said, all these tools, the NSA has them, other people are going to have them. If they create either a tool, or if they create a vulnerability in iOS that allows a backdoor for law enforcement, somebody's going to have that. Well, and it's not just going to be people trying to get your phone numbers, getting your banking information. Well, we're talking about a foreign government trying to say it would be very, very useful for us to get access to an assistant to the Secretary of the Treasury's phone. So we know this. We'll just use this $200,000 vulnerability we bought to make sure that we can remotely get into this thing and take a look at his call history. It's like that's the level of the threat that is presented when, if Apple were to say, yes, we will weaken iOS to make sure that we can find out what was inside the head and the phone of a horrible killer who decided to kill themselves or get killed.
Well, so I correct myself. The warrant was for iCloud content. Then there was a more general warrant issued separately to allow law enforcement to access the phone. So there were two warrants.
Well, and it seems like they're going to have to get to a point where law enforcement is trained on how to take care of, how to manage phones. You know, if this is so important to them, it seems like in both cases, San Bernardino and this shooting, you had law enforcement making mistakes that probably locked up the content. And so, this is something that they need to have a little tech training on how to make sure that at least they did all the things that they need to do. I think that, again, all these viruses that shut down subways and hospitals and businesses all over Russia and Europe and even possibly coffee shops here, those were all NSA hack tools, that got out into the open and then they, they're used against us. And and if you want to see how bad it can get, you can look at those hacks and see.
I'm going to ask Steve after the show. Steve Gibson's Security Now is coming up, because last week he asserted something, and I need to get clarity in what he was saying. But he said he did believe, maybe it isn't for this phone, but in future it'd be possible for Apple to unlock an individual phone without risking compromise of other phones. That it's possible that Apple, I think the idea would be Apple could push a firmware update to that one phone that would release the key that's stored on that phone in order to unencrypt the data on that phone. And that technique, while it could later be applied by to other phones, wouldn't necessarily provide a tool that would unlock other phones. But of course, Apple's concern would not merely be that it would leak out, hackers would get it, but that China would come to it, or some other country would go. Or Erdogan would come to them and say, hey, by the way, I know you have this tool now. Would you please unlock this dissidence?
I think that the United States is the least of their worries. It's the other countries that as soon as they open that door. And I think that Apple is they're not trying to build any backdoor. They're trying to make it impossible.
There's two problems. One is the problem that there would be a tool that would unencrypt phones that would leak to bad guys. But the other is that they would show an ability that they don't want to show, foreign governments to.
And I think that every time
the individual phone,
I think every time they find that ability, they find a way to code it out of the system. I mean, I think that Apple's not. I think they are actively, every OS update that we're getting is closing gaps. You know, and I think that the problem is they have to rush that down that path because eventually they may end up with a government that says you have to do X, Y, and Z, but it's already out. Like every time Apple already releases it, it becomes harder and harder for a government to ask for it. So I think that's a huge push for them is to just keep on driving out every access that they would have.
It's also our governments too have been caught doing things that aren't exactly legal or hiding all sorts of requests under FISA and similar, depending
on
what your country is.
But then I understand why the deputy director of the FBI, Rod Rosenstein, would say Apple is actively working against us. They're actively trying to make the data inaccessible to us, and he said it's actually going to cost lives. And I can understand. I mean, putting my FBI deputy director hat on, I can see why that would be upsetting. Because they are. Doesn't that look like that? They're actively working to make it impossible.
Well, the thing that we grown-ups have to acknowledge is that yes, it is going to cost lives. The ability of bad people to have communications beyond the eyes of any overseeing agency, that is going to cost lives. But that's the same reason why, again, having the Fourth Amendment is going to cost lives. Having the First Amendment is going to cost lives. We just make a decision as a society that there is an amount of reasonable risk we're willing to undergo in order to protect a larger freedom. This is why the rule of law is not, well, if you've got nothing to hide, then why can't we see it? That's not the rule of law. The rule of law is that if you have personal information, the government has to go through hoops in order to force you to give that information up. But the big difference in this generation is that they have never, ever, ever been confronted by technology that is almost as effective as writing something down on a piece of paper and throwing it into a fire. And that's what this level of encryption is like. And once law enforcement is faced with that someone can have useful information that cannot possibly be broken out of a safe or decrypted or on their own, now you've got to, well, we didn't have to fight for this right for law enforcement to have the right to access any piece of information being transacted anywhere in the country, but now we feel as though we have to ask for that right, and it's up to us as citizens to say, no, you do not have that right.
And to take it, it sounds like science fiction, but to take it a step further, we'll be at a point soon where we have machine learning predicting crimes and we'll have implants that are deeply connected to us. And eventually the brains are just electrical data. We'll be able to read stuff on there. And we've up until now considered thought to be sacrosanct. And you could argue that a smartphone is the closest thing we have right now to actual bionics, where it's an extension of our brain and it retains information that we're just no longer capable of retaining, like contacts and all these different things. And how far does our right against self-incrimination go? Should this be considered privilege and not accessible? And to Andy's point, as a society, we're going to have to start grappling with all these rules. It's not just Minority Report. I mean, I was joking around with my godkid the other day saying, do you want to watch Knight Rider? He said, what is it? I said, it's a car that talks like Siri. No, it drives itself like Tesla. And my childhood is his reality. And very soon, all those science fiction movies about very intrusive, government surveillance and a biological level are going to be true. Well, and it would behoove us to figure it out.
A lot of the government surveillance is already available. I mean, they're pretty good at what they do. So, I mean, I think that, you know, we need to understand that, you know, the thing that is probably more valuable to the government that we did turn off was metadata. You know, being able to mass collect metadata, even when you don't need it, is probably way more valuable than anything on a phone. And because it means that you can go back in time and see someone become a terrorist. Yeah. That is before someone told them to strip their phone.
Right.
Because you can interconnect all of that. So who were they talking to when they got the new phone? That kind of thing is the stuff that is much more valuable.
That was the conclusion. You remember the was it an MIT study called Going Dark? That was the conclusion. A lot of law enforcement, but security experts got together to write this paper. It said the abilities for law enforcement to collect data has improved at a greater rate than the means to hide data. Mm. And in fact, law enforcement has more than ample data. The concern about going dark is overstated.
It's hard.
Our show today brought to you, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about lots more, including Apple's geniuses who are straining under the load of iPhone's success. It's a burden for them. And what Apple's doing about it, including opening the new store, we got to make a field trip down to Burlingame, see that new Apple store with the new look Apple store. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy cloud accounting software that's used by over 10 million people. I used it for years. It started for me in making invoices, and that's really kind of the first step into the FreshBooks universe. It makes it very easy to create professional-looking invoices that get you paid faster. Faster because, well, the longer you put off doing the invoice chore, the longer it's going to take to get paid. But also because those invoices make it easy for your clients to pay, they tend to pay, on average, 11 days faster. Plus, it turns out, you know, if you're doing invoices, you're doing expense receipts, you're counting hours, you're actually doing a bunch of the work accounting needs without doing any accounting. So the FreshBooks and that new dashboard can tell you, are you making a profit? You could see your spending, your outstanding balances. You get all those kind of in the process of doing invoices alone. Plus, FreshBooks invoices have all sorts of nice features, like you can reward prompt clients and encourage customer loyalty by adding discounts to recurring templates. You can have recurring invoices. You can have automated invoices. You can have automated payment if your client agrees. It's all in there. With FreshBooks, of course, you can bill for time by client, but also by project. And the FreshBooks app and the FreshBooks website have timers there. You can assign services to projects, designate different rates for each service. All you do, you press play, you track your time to the minute. The time entries are sorted chronologically on the invoice. Automatically, they're imported right in, and you can even add future unbilled time entries to your recurring templates so you don't miss a minute. Of course, all your expenses are in there, too. You take a picture of the receipt with your app on the phone, and it'll automatically put it in the invoice or keep track of it. You can see the receipt attachments when you view invoices in the iOS app. Employees can log into the FreshBooks mobile app for iOS, which makes it easy for them to help your business, taking care of it wherever they are. I can go on and on. I tell you what, go to FreshBooks.com/MacBreak and try it free for 30 days. Great help. Great support, too, from some of the best support people in the world, right up there in beautiful Toronto. It's no wonder FreshBooks was included in the Forbes Small Giants list for 2017. I used it for a long time, and I think you might want to try this. It is incredible. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. And just, if you do me a favor, put MacBreak Weekly in the How Did You Hear About Us section so that they know how you heard about us, right? FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. Apple geniuses straining under the iPhone's success. But it's true. If you ever go into an Apple store, it is so crowded in there.
I have two iPads that my kids locked themselves out of by trying to put the wrong code in. And I'm just like, I always go, oh, I got to take that in and get it fixed. And then I'm just like, oh, I don't have time. Just wait in line for 45 minutes.
So one way to solve this, Apple's redesigning its stores. The Chicago store featured a massive revamp, including bigger spaces with sweeping balconies and leather seating balls.
Have you been to the Chicago store?
No.
I have been to the Chicago store.
How are those leather balls?
They
comfy?
That was hard. It was. They are. Yeah.
It's
Chicago
like Union
store,
Square, I think, right?
The Chicago the, store.
They
is
have a Grove
amazing.
Now, right? But the Grove, even the Grove is changing. I guess the new Burlingame store.
By the way, the best part, I mean, there's so many great things about the Chicago store, but the monitor, the wall. We deal with LED walls a lot. So I'm a connoisseur of LED walls. And I literally, it was the nicest LED wall I've ever seen. Like, I got my head up to it and looked up sideways. And I was looking for, like, where are the components? And it's like this.
The one at Apple Park is really nice, too.
Oh, my. Yeah, we'll talk about that one. Yeah, they're probably the same ones. And it was stunning.
They opened the visitor center, which is cool. So here is, this is a small store. This is not a big store. This is in Burlingame, California. And I guess Burlington, Vermont got one of this new, it's kind of monolithic, kind of a cube.
Yeah.
The new design.
Kind of brutalist.
Yeah, brutalist is right. Yeah, look at that. But there's still that glass. By the way, they are getting a new pane of glass for the Brooklyn Mac store.
Quickly.
It's really ugly. Johnny Ives, dang it, hurts
my
head.
Whoever dropped that is big.
It's hurting my head. This doesn't look that different. I guess this is iPhone 10 day.
Yeah. It's too bad. I happened to be close to the very first Apple store in Towers Corner, Virginia. last week. So I decided to visit Apple Store 0001. And I was kind of disappointed that there was nothing. I wasn't expecting it to be a special store, but there should be at least something there to say, oh, by the way, this was the first store ever open to the public. And so it's, I appreciate that this isn't like the Chicago store. This isn't like the New York City store. It's not like designed to be. This is one of the big landmarks of the entire chain. They have to have a design they can fit in every single mall that they need to put something into. But it is kind of disappointing that it really was no different from the Apple store that I was in my hometown just the night before I left. Although you can see, just like we're talking about how it's okay to ship first and then adjust as you go. You can definitely see the difference between now that there is not a counter in the back with the Genius logo above it. Really, the entire store is it's a genius bar.
Yeah.
And off to the sides, there are iPhone cases that you can buy. So you just simply take a seat and then they bring your Genius to your seat as you go.
I had that experience last time I was in Apple Store, and that was nice. That was cool.
Yeah.
You still have to make an appointment though, right?
Yeah,
you still should make an appointment, but they're also wide. They used to be like deep, and now they're wider than they are deep because people. It's just the entrance will just get completely clogged with people. It's like a progress bar, like sort of anti-progress bar of how many people are waiting for the Genius bar, because it'll be dense people, and then they'll start filling to the front of the store as people keep waiting. So you definitely see the success of the Apple Store in the redesign.
It's very expensive to visit an Apple Store for me. I get in there, I'm always like,
oh, look at that.
And next thing I know, I've bought like two places that I have to be careful about is Apple Stores and B&H.
Yeah.
B&H Photo.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
B&H is much worse than Apple, but they're both similar.
We have defined what a unit of Alex is for money. From here on forth, I have determined that $50 is a unit of Renee. Because when I was in that Apple Store last week, I couldn't help but look at that big rack of like Apple bands and just walk over there to see, is there something that I don't have? If there's something I'm not collecting these bands. I only have two or three of them, but I got to say that I saw one last week that turned out to be a limited leather edition that I kind of liked. So I kind of just like when I was like, 19 years old collecting action figures. Well, I'm near Toys R Us anyway. Let's just see if they have the limited edition Stormtrooper figure that has a removable head that turns into Han Solo.
This is the visitor center. It opened a couple of weeks ago. You can now go if you're in Cupertino, California, and see it. That is the roof looks like it's floating. It's a cantilever design. They like those all glass walls, don't they?
And curved corners.
Yeah.
Like so someone who curved corners are so hard to do in glass. They're just showing off at that point.
Yeah, they're just.
Yes.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah. Can do that.
What else would you like?
It's architecture porn, basically.
Yeah. Here's a 3D model of Apple Park, so you can even use augmented reality. See the people holding up iPads?
We got to try that. That's wild. They have like these special iPads that are monogrammed with the Apple Park symbol, the ring on the back of them. And they have a bunch of Apple technicians around to help you with it. And you hold it up and you see the ring, and then like the roof floats up off of it, and you can turn around and start looking down and around inside it.
That's nice.
It reminds me of every school field trip when I was a little kid, when you go to the science museum and there's a diorama where you push the button and then suddenly the part of the settlement that has the fish racks drying lights up and the voice says, meanwhile, these fish wattles were used to both track fish and also hang them for drying for the coming season.
I don't know if you can see it there, but they have a wall with Hermes and then just the Hermes watches.
That's
sort of
the Hermes wall.
That's my kryptonite.
The shirts are red, at least in the Apple Store. They're all red shirts. I don't know what that.
No, I think that's just the color du jour. They were red in the Tyson's Corner Mall store last week too.
Yeah, they bring out the holiday shirts, right?
And they have pins. Yeah. They've been giving them pins like they did at WWDC, which are really cool.
It's easier to find them.
Here's the outside part. That's pretty. Or is it inside with glass? I don't know. It feels outside. That's very pretty. It's
open. Cafe, inside your head, Leo. Don't let them inside your head.
9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday. Pretty. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Go on down, ladies and gentlemen, the new visitor center. But now you've been there, Renee. Can you see? Yep. You can't see the spaceship campus from there, though, can you?
There's an observation deck upstairs that you can walk up. And I believe – I'm a little bit – because I walked around there and it was an event, so it was crazy. But I believe that you can see it from the observation level. But it's a ways off. Like, it's a good walk away from where you're nowhere near the ring.
Right. You can't really get to the
ring. Even on Apple Park Way. You're on Tantau Drive when you go into the visitor section.
Tantan Drive?
Tantau.
Is it a little bit warmer there? This is Time Magazine's top 10 gadgets of 2017. Apple's in there, actually. Apple's close, but not quite at the top, which kind of surprised me. Number two, the iPhone 10, the Apple Watch appears in the list. But what do you think? The number one, according to Time Magazine, gadget of 2017 is?
The new Lego Millennium Falcon.
Exactly right. No, it's the Nintendo Switch.
I won't argue that one.
It's pretty cool, but I don't know. Yeah. I think the 10 really, well.
I mean, the Nintendo Switch is, it's got issues, like that screen is plasticky and not very scratched, but it is just so much fun.
It is
so much fun.
Amazing.
I've not allowed myself to buy one because I would never be seen by humanity again.
Yeah. Fortunately, my son took mine. Microsoft Surface Laptop in there at number three. The DJI Spark.
Yeah.
I think the Spark, I don't think that should have been put in there.
No, we like the Mavic Pro, you and me.
Well, the problem is the Spark, the arms don't fold. But that's all I got to say.
Alex is going to walk over there right now.
No, it's like I was all excited about buying a Spark, and they're like, what are the big advantages of the Mavic? And the guy goes, well, you can fold the arms. I'm like, you can't fold the arms on the Spark. And that was
I love that I can fold the arms. My Mavic is so compact. Yeah. You don't love it.
I throw it in my backpack all the time.
Yeah.
I got to say that this week is the start of Black Friday week, which means it's the start of my actually setting watch alarms to make sure that I tweet out links to things that I have bought previously on Amazon that I could recommend because they're on sale. And knowing that 90 days later for my affiliate links, I use Amazon affiliate links for things that are not tech related, that are not, part of my job as a reporter and as a journalist, but for things like, sous vide cookers and movies and books and things like that. And I always make a little literally a little Santa's list of things that I would never buy with real money, but I would buy with like the money that I get from all the shopping that gets done during the Christmas season. And I kind of want a folding Mavic drone. It's like I can't possibly justify it. I just want a flying camera drone that folds up that I can put inside my bag.
So I know fun. It's so cool. So if you buy
the Mel Brooks DVD collection for Blu-ray collection for $20, you're helping me get the power to annoy the hell out of my neighbors and scare their cats.
Well, and there's little things in my house. I was like, I wonder what's over on the other side of that hill. So I just. I just got my Mavic out and just flew up over the hill to see what's on the other side. I was just like,
isn't that fun? It's one of the fun things to do with it.
Yeah. I wonder if there are any code violations to that porch that my neighbor is putting up.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see. All right, I guess we got to talk now about this. And this is just breaking news this morning. The FCC unveiled their plan to eliminate net neutrality. This is the Washington Post. Federal regulators unveiled a plan that would give internet providers broad powers to determine what websites and online services their customers can see and use and at what cost. Now, this isn't law yet. It sets the stage for a vote next month. Ajit Pai, the chairman of the FCC, said that we're going to stop micromanaging the internet. I might not characterize it as micromanaging.
Did it have a sponsored by Verizon logo on the bill? Like, is it?
Yeah, they might as well.
I don't. So I think they're probably going to vote it through, and I think it's going
to
be
December 14th. It's expected to pass. Republicans control three of the commission's five seats. They have a majority.
Right. I'm going to lay out a prediction that if it passes, I don't think it's going to turn out as well for Verizon, Comcast, and AT&T as they think it will. I think they're excited about it. I think that, but what I think this will do when they open this up, is it's going to worry people like Apple, people like Google, people like Facebook, and suddenly they're going to get competition from areas that they can't afford to fight. And I think that
I hope that's the case.
I think they're not going to put up with it. I think they're going to go. The people are going to be like, especially Google has spent a lot of time figuring stuff out. And I think that. I think that they're going to wish when the dust settles 10 years from now, AT&T and Verizon and Comcast, this may kill them. I think that this actually may actually be the thing that unwinds.
Well,
them.
If they take advantage of this and do things like say, well, we're going to block Skype because we have our own VoIP service, then, and by the way, you will know that besides the fact that Skype will stop working, you will know that because one of the rules requires transparency. They do have to post on a clearly visible website what they're blocking, what they're prioritizing, what they're doing. So they're not supposed to do this in secret. One issue there is that they're moving enforcement of this from the FCC to the FTC, which enforces many, many other trade rules and is by some measures overburdened already. So yeah. I'm not sure how enforcement will look.
But essentially, you're gonna let
the internet service providers regulate themselves as long as they are honest about it.
What I'd love to see, the only thing that I think is missing, and I haven't read this, so maybe it's not missing, but I think they ought to basically take off all the fettering that they've done to the local governments and say, okay, look, if we're gonna take all these rules away and you guys can charge whatever you want, but local governments are now allowed to compete.
No, they're not doing that. And that's another thing, by the way, that Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T are shutting down local governments everywhere from competing with them. So,
but I think that
they both want a non-competitive environment and to be able to set the rules they want.
But I think that the problem they're going to have is that those people are going to, if they start getting clamped down and they start seeing that their traffic is being shaped, I think you're going to end up with a lot more groundswell for people to work with, and maybe it's working with Google, maybe it's working with Apple or whatever to push these guys out. You know, I think that they, you know, I think it's going to be much more complicated than they
I love Tom Wheeler's response. He said, if you like your cable company, you'll love what this does for the internet. He says It's tragic. The job of the FCC is to represent the consumer. Tragically, this decision is only for the benefit of the largely monopoly services that deliver the internet consumer.
It's going to be tough. There are already organizations that are lined up to sue to prevent them from doing this, from taking this action. I feel as though they're going to get a lot of help from a lot of wealthy companies in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they'll also have a lot of there are people who have political firepower backing up that money. That's going to make you don't. The sad fact is that the reason why despots get into trouble is that when they make it difficult for rich people inside their countries to continue to make lots and lots of money. And so if you're threatening Google, if you're threatening Apple, if you're threatening Netflix, actually more Google, Apple, and Facebook, if you're threatening these companies with the ability to make unfettered profits, they're going to start aiming the money cannon at people who can really, really hurt
you. That's
going to
be a bad
thing. And also, I think this is more a problem of less of them turning off Skype so much as, well, great, now we can charge people extra for Skype, and that's just as good for them.
Right. I think or zero rate competitors.
Right.
I think the hard part is that it won't really hurt Apple or Facebook or Google because they'll be able to afford it. In fact, it cuts out some of their competition. But I think that there's an opportunity from a marketing perspective for Apple, Facebook, and Google and a couple other ones to build a consortium and maybe even build a Hulu-style ISP that is, you know, all of these companies that are against it and saying, okay, here's the deal. We've got $1 trillion in cash and we're going to pound you into the ground if you go any, you know, and it's a good marketing for them. I'm just going to say it's not good business.
There's lots of roadblocks. There's lots of roadblocks. Well, there's an infrastructure roadblock. I mean, there's, you know, cities that offer monopolies.
You don't have to compete in every city to crush AT&T, Verizon. You have to compete in the top 20.
Right.
You take the top 20 markets and you attack those. You take those away and they're done. Like, it's just too many people. It's too many subscribers, and that's where all the easy, you know, the right thing to do for Apple and Google and Facebook and all these and Amazon and Microsoft, take the top 5. And if they build a consortium and say, we're going to spend real money in the top 20 markets because we disagree with this, this will get real ugly real fast for the incumbents, you know, because they're going to have a lot of people backing it and a lot of people who are online, a lot of people that are online vocally. You know, I think that there is a huge opportunity to have the government, you know, to pummel these guys for doing this.
Yeah, I do think that this does affect companies like Apple and Facebook and Google directly, because all of the technologies that they've come out are increasingly eating a lot more bandwidth. Like, here is Apple Music, we're going to be able to stream at high velocities. Here is 4K video that we want to be able to push out. Here's 4K streaming. Here's 4K chat and even standard HD chat. All of this is based on the idea that whenever people have access to the internet, the fact that they are fire hosing data costs them about as much money as they would if they were just simply squirt gunning data out there. So the next time that students go to hang out at Starbucks or at a coffee shop and suddenly they realize that the router installed at Starbucks has been decided to turn off access to FaceTime because they can't afford what their ISP is going to charge the coffee shop to offer free internet, free Wi-Fi for that service, that's when it's that's when you start interfering with Apple's ability to make money. They're also, I think, that in a position where they just have to, they're just fundamentally hating this. And this is fun. I think they believe fundamentally this is wrong for the for the ability of technology to find its own level, to find its own level of greatness. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be as bad as it could possibly get, but I don't think it's going to be good at all. And we're not going to find out for another year or two.
FCC is also ordering states to scrap plans. Remember, the states were going to come up with their own net neutrality plans here in California. That was in play, but they are going to say this law, Fed law, preempts yours. Some have pointed out that the sunshine rules, the transparency rules, will work as well as they do for privacy. Yes, yeah, FTC totally does require privacy statements, but it doesn't mean companies can't do anything they want. In fact, they do. And I'm most worried not about Apple and Google. I hope that Apple and Google weigh in. I think in the long run, it's good for their business, and they won't, because it's good for YouTube. But what it does is it tilts the playing field, let's say, more towards YouTube, because Google can afford to pay those bandwidth costs, and away from companies like Twit and other up-and-coming companies, innovators, who will be disadvantaged. The playing field's already tilted in YouTube's favor. It's going to be tilted more in YouTube's favor. And I could say just personally, this is going to, if this goes, you know, lives up to its full potential, could disadvantage us. Seriously disadvantages.
Totally. And I mean, so I'm usually a huge optimist about this kind of stuff, but I find it hard to be optimistic because Apple has not been very vocal about net neutrality. Google has waffled on net neutrality. Facebook gives me the sense that they would love to just pay to zero rate all their services at the expense of the competition that you mentioned. Totally. I mean, I believe there's, you know, that's top of their list. These companies could have spoken out. This has been years in the making, and they've been relatively quiet, and they could have wielded their money and their influence for a decade before we got anywhere near this point. And coming at it from behind is a lot of work. And I think exactly what you said, Leo, is just detrimental to anybody else who wants to get in the field. And that's the exact opposite of what the whole utilities thing is supposed to do to begin with.
If you've enjoyed a rich, vibrant podcast ecosystem, which we have up till now, one thing you've already noticed is that the big players are starting to suck the air out of the room, and it's just going to get worse. And you're not going to see those diverse podcasts that you used to see. You're not going to see anywhere near the kind of diversity you used to see. And I think that that's just what's going to happen. If you want to stream video, you'll stream it on YouTube or Facebook because they'll be zero rated. And you won't do it yourself because that would be nuts.
Well, you can look at, you know, T-Mobile has their, you know, their whole thing where you're basically there's a whole bunch of partners that are, and that's been always this kind of gray area of,
yeah, they're zero rating. FCC has always considered that to be antithetic to net neutrality. I think consumers don't really understand why not charging them for bandwidth for some players, but charging them for others is not net neutrality. I think they have a harder time understanding it because it looks like you're saving money.
And I think we'll see a lot of that too. And I think that's going to be what's confusing for consumers is they're going to be like, whoa, I no longer have to pay for anything
YouTube
I watch
is not
on
bandwidth.
And I think what you may see, I mean, this is the unfortunate thing is I think that, get back to MacBreak. Apple can afford to say, hey, we're going to pay AT&T, Verizon, or whatever, some ungodly amount to make sure that you never get slowed down ever on watching your Apple TV. Because I know that, and that's the
they've
the
already
kind of
done
stuff
that with Netflix.
Yeah.
Well,
Netflix already does that. Yeah.
But Apple does it for Netflix. They put a Netflix on Akamai.
Right.
I mean, that's a huge cost to Apple, but it means the best Netflix experience is on Apple TV.
Right.
This is very disappointing news. There are perhaps some bright lights. Congress has said this. Maybe we want to weigh in here, and Congress could overrule the FCC. The FCC can only do what Congress lets it do. And some have said the courts are not going to let this happen. We'll see. I'm sure there will be a court challenge, and we'll see if the courts say yes or no to this. Go ahead, Renee. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, I said my piece.
I think it opens up I think it could also open up the conversation about whether we should make the ISPs utilities. You know, I think if people get upset about it, if they go down too far, if they move too quickly down this path, they could end up with a lot more regulation than what they have now. Because I think it's a valid point that they should be.
We just have such short attention span these days. Things that used to be a huge nation-moving crisis, we just forget about.
Well, there are also many more hair on fire moments than there used to be.
Yeah, so that's what I have to say.
We have a lot more to pay attention to.
When the iPhone 3G launched, Canada took to the streets because we used to pay $100 for 200 megabytes of data, and we took to the streets and said, "This is not right. We're not going to be treated like a data dev." And it was one of the few times that Canadians actually bothered to get off their couches and do something, and it worked. But I think if it happened now, we'd be like, "Oh, this is really terrible." Well, oh my God, who did what on Twitter?
Well, but I think that the issue is that there's so many of us using so much data that and it's not hard to organize now. It's easier now than ever. I think that, I mean, that's what shot down a lot of this in the past is SOPA and so on and so forth, was that people can organize very fast and do a lot. The groundswell can get intense.
I hope so. And in a related story, China doesn't have any net neutrality. They also don't have Skype.
Right.
Yeah. Skype has been removed from app stores on both Windows and Apple. And it's harder and harder to get. You'd have to get it kind of through a back channel if you wanted to.
Are they still removing VPN next year?
Yep. All VPN apps are going away. Although that doesn't mean VPNs are going away. It just means you can't use the apps
anymore. You have to get an enterprise distribution or compile it yourself in Xcode.
There you go. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, which is not, that's not a easy thing for most people to do.
Right. But if you're motivated.
How does that work in a VPN is like built into the Mac OS.
Right.
How do they?
It's an extension service in iOS. There's four or five different VPN extensions. So basically you compile an app and it offers a VPN extension service to the system. Mm-hmm. And then it'll just run like an extension.
Russia's also eliminating VPNs.
They've increased the amount that you can just, like previously it was very few that you could distribute over enterprise. Now it's voluminous. You can put many, many versions of the app out that way.
So on a bright note, let's cheer people up. Black Friday is coming around the corner.
Yes.
Apple, not historically a great Black Friday kind of place. Are there going to be some Black Friday deals on Friday?
Oh, yeah. I mean, not from Apple itself will probably give you a firm handshake and a small gift card.
Yeah.
For a very few of your... but there are other resellers that looks like the Targets and the Best Buys and stuff. There's certain products that, like iPhone 10, you're not going to get it for half off. I know
we were talking today on iOS today. Walmart's offering a $300 gift card with an iPhone 10 purchase. If you buy stuff at Walmart, that's $300 off.
And there's good Apple Watch deals from a lot of providers. It's going to be much cheaper than they usually are. There's going to be a lot of, if you don't mind shopping around, there'll be a lot of really good stuff, just not at the Apple store.
Yeah. Okay.
That wasn't also Internet of Things. If you want your home kit and your health kit stuff, there'll be a lot of really good sales.
Wasn't as cheerful as I was hoping. You know what'll cheer me up? Your picks of the week. Gentlemen, prepare them. They're coming up right after this word from our sponsor, Jamf, JAMF. You know Jamf if you are in IT and you manage Macs. But did you know about their new Jamf Now platform? It's an on-demand mobile device management solution for Apple devices. Makes it so much easier to keep track of all your Apple devices at work, secure the lost iPads, automatically deploy from your central location apps, view device details. You'll know exactly what's in your inventory, where everything is, deploy Wi-Fi passwords, secure company data, enforce passcodes. Look, you've got Apple devices in your business. Maybe it's time to keep track of them. Macs and iPhones and iPads. It's really interesting to watch our business change. As more and more people are working here, it's gone from being some simple Windows machines to a ton of Apple products. It's almost all Apple now. And Jamf Now is a huge, huge benefit. No IT experience needed. You can set up and manage and protect your Apple devices in minutes. Focus on your business, but keep track of your assets. Cover your assets with Jamf Now and start securing your business today. And by the way, I love that you can create a free Jamf Now account and manage your first three devices for free. JAMF, jamf.com/MacBreak. Add additional devices for just $2 a month per device. It's easy. It's inexpensive. And it's very powerful. JAMF, Jamf Now at jamf.com/MacBreak. Kind of a legendary name in the Macintosh world, and a great new product from Jamf Now. I think we should do some picks of the week. I'm going to start from left to right, Mr. Rene Ritchie.
So I have a quasi self-serving pick this week. We have a the same company that owns iMore owns a site called thrifter.com, and all they do all day, every day is find deals. And what this team has done, I don't work with them, but I know the guy who runs the team, Dan De Silva, he's awesome. They have gone down to Miami and rented a small area. I don't know if it is actually an Airbnb or something. And the entire team of like 10 people are in there working like 24 hours a day for the next 10 days,
wow.
Just finding and putting up. And the thing I love about it, and I use it all the time, is that they do it almost like Axios does news, where you click on it and it tells you like, this is a deal and this is historically the low price. This is the price it is now. This is the price we're expecting it to be. Is it worth getting because maybe it's low on stock and will run out? You know, maybe you can get it cheaper, but we don't think it'll show up cheaper during the holidays. And it just, it gives you really, really good, really vetted, really qualified stuff. And they really sit there and they debate whether a deal is good enough to go up. And they really, like they find like the iTunes gift cards that I always put in stocking stuffers, and the home hubs, which are really hot this year, and like the Nintendo services. And they're just, every time I look, they've got a new deal up and they're working their butts off for the next few days. So if you're interested in stuff, I'm going to be, I used to do this every year. I like load Best Buy and I'd load Amazon and I'd look around.
This is
and
great. What a great site.
See, and it's like, what makes this deal worth considering? Things know before you buy, and they let you know like if there's any gotchas, or whether it's real money that's off, or whether like, 'cause a real discount is still better than a gift card. You know, they give you all those details.
This is really, really fantastic. This is the best Black Friday site I've ever seen. This is the one, thrifter.com. And by the way, $90 for a 1-year Apple Music membership. That's a good deal.
They're putting them up all the time because some of them expire. Like you go there and they're sold out, or they're door crashers or whatnot, and they're always updating them.
Really nice.
Yeah.
Thank you, Renee. Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week.
Here it is.
I saw this and it's been going so hard for me not to pick this up. It's a fidget spinner.
This is like the Apple of fidget spinners. Like it's called Focus Orbitals.
You know, I saw this. Where did I see this? Was it a Kickstarter or was it on Amazon?
No, full disclosure, my cousin and his wife put it together.
It's got the suits, playing card suits.
Something about it. Yeah, and
it's really heavy, nice metal.
It is.
This is nice.
Yeah, it's the
high
end.
Do you know how
hard
it's been for me not to pick that up?
What? I know.
It's been sitting there the whole show, I've been wanting to pick it up,
I knew you'd want to play with it.
That's nice. So, that's the nicest fidget spinner I've ever seen.
It is. Like, this is, and it's beyond a fidget spinner. It really is like a focus, there's something about it that you're just...
Why do they have the suits on there, the card suits?
They have lots of different designs. This just happens to be one of them. So this
Where can I find it?
It is on, it's in Amazon, if you find Focus, it's called a Phi. And it's Focus Orbitals.
Okay.
And it's just got, there's something about it that's a mixture of comfort, and it's just the right size and precision. And now these are all magnets too, so you can pull them out. So if you want it to be like a little looser, look at this. So you pull a couple of these out like that. So now play with it.
Now it's unbalanced.
Now it's different.
Ooh.
See, so it's got like a different feel to it.
You could pull out the balls.
Yeah, because they're all magnets. So now it has a different feel to it.
So it's all magnetic.
Yeah.
See,
that's what I'm talking about. The hook is deep. So it is like, especially when you're thinking about, like, for the person who's got everything, you know, and you want to
It's $100, so.
It's not the least expensive one, but no. We're all using Macs and iPhone 10s.
The Macintosh of fidget spinners.
It is. It's just, and again, I think that it kind of transcends the fidget spinner thing, because I have not
fallen for the fidget.
No, my kids have fidget spinners. My kids build fidget spinners, but this one is at a whole different level. And anyway, it's really slick. So
Focus Orbitals.
I know it's very analog for an Apple show, but it's
or is it fee? Might be fee because it's a Greek word.
Yeah,
the fee.
I actually don't know the pronunciation of
Focus,
it.
Focus at Focus Orbitals on Twitter, or
and they've got lots of little movies of how they work.
Yeah, they do,
and everything else. And anyway,
these are nicely machined. This is not. I can see why it's expensive. This is a non.
And when you feel it, it's not
It feels really.
Yeah, it's not a. It's not. It doesn't
and
feel
it's
like
only
some
a
little
seventh
piece of plastic.
Of an Alex, come on, guys.
Exactly.
Now, how much would you pay?
You could get 7 of these for an Alex.
Yeah, exactly.
Andy Anatko, your pick of the week.
Well, since we're talking about physics, I've used this as pick of the week before. So it's another quick plug for Fidgetopia, because this is the holiday buying season.
Oh my God, another one.
They do. This is the Big Kahuna Chainmail Vortex. And it's a stack of steel rings, just like in a really, really tight, like little vortex. And you can just sort of like roll them like one ring at a time on top of the other like that. And it really is like Captain Queeg and his ball bearings with the strawberries. Just you're just holding your hand like this and just sort of just imagine like Silly Putty only made out of metals, steel rings. That's kind of like what it's like.
It looks like Colossus is Bezor.
Yeah, it's pretty, and it's also a very pretty thing just like on my desk. I just enjoy having this thing that makes me look interesting. And they also have my travel one is the, I don't know what they call it, but this is bike chain, but it is really nicely set up where it's just it's like eight links here. And it is like having like prayer beads that you can just sort of like roll around your finger. The Big Kahuna is, I think it's the most expensive one they make, is $25. This one is $18. And every time I buy something from them, there is a very nice handwritten note and a couple of Tootsie Rolls. So these are like handmade stuff. This isn't like it comes off a boat from China either. So you feel very, very happy supporting someone who is making some really, really cool things. I like them a lot. My actual pick of the week is kind of lame, but it's very, very timely. We were talking about this earlier, even though I tended to talk about this. A lot of people have bought sous vide cookers based on my recommendation. And our recommendations were big fans of sous vide cookers, those immersion water heaters. And whenever I'm cooking Thanksgiving dinner, I have completely moved away from let's roast an entire turkey and completely into let us buy a couple of like 8 to 10 pound like trussed up turkey breasts and sous vide them. Definitely your first year you try this, you definitely want to transition into this by doing a smaller roast bird, and then on the side of that you have a bonus sous vide breast, because you don't want to go all in on a new thing for family Thanksgiving all in one year. Also, you're going to realize that the hardest part of sous vide is not the cooking, which is very, very easy, not making it hot, moist and flavorful, because you can hardly fail to do that. It's when you have to, when your mother asks, "So how did you cook this? Like 350 degrees?" And no, it was cooked at 142 degrees. What? 142 degrees. You're serving turkey cooked at 142 degrees. Are you trying to kill us
for two and a half hours, Mom?
You're never hosting your. I knew I should have brought. I told your father I should cook a turkey and bring it because you're going to screw this up. But yes, sous vide, it really will change the way you do Thanksgiving. I also do mashed potatoes the day before, bag them up in the vacuum sealer, and then pop them in a sous vide just to heat them back up. And that's one less thing to do on Thanksgiving Day, and they turn out perfect. Even if you go to the store, you can buy the prepackaged mashed potatoes. Again, just plop it out of the package, put it into a bag, put it into the sous vide, boom, that's something taken care of. The overall thing I recommend is that just forget all about the cartoon TV movie style Thanksgiving that you've been forced fed, that you're supposed to have a beautiful golden brown cartoonishly shaped turkey that you present at the table and carve. It's like, no, it's you're there to achieve a result, to produce a really good meal involving turkey, green beans, mashed potatoes, stuffing, and cranberry sauce. And you can articulate those five ideas however you'd like, but so long as you get those five things on the table and maybe one selection between red and white wine and sodas for the kids, you're golden. However, and so don't invite all kinds of stress onto your life because you must roast the turkey and you must do it, must be all intact when you bring it to the table, and you must do the beans this way. Again, boiling water is usually the easiest way to cook a turkey, I find.
There you have it. And actually, I should mention, I think it was many years ago, mentioned this sous vide, ridiculously expensive sous vide cooker, the Mello. Mine finally came. And actually, I will demonstrate it. You'll see it Saturday at work in the new Screensavers show. And they are offering $100 off for Black Friday, which means it's only a ridiculous $299 instead of $399.
Is this better than deep frying the turkey? That's my only
question. No. I'm just going to say no. But it is the best way to make soft-boiled eggs you've ever had. And what I really like about it is this is a sous vide device that chills and heats. So one of the biggest problems with sous vide is it's hours. Like that turkey breast recipe that you mentioned from Serious Eats, Kenji Alt-Lopez, who's great, takes 2.5 hours of sous viding time. So if you're at work and you have to come home at 5 and you don't eat dinner till 8, you may not be super happy. But the Mellow, you put it in when you leave. It keeps it cold. You say, this was the greatest thing. I put 2 steaks in and it says, well, how well you want them cooked. And you get to choose. How thick are the steaks? You get to choose. And then it says, it doesn't say what temperature. It doesn't say what time. It just says, and when would you like to eat? And you say 6 p.m. And it says, good, we'll handle it from here. It chills it until whatever it is, an hour and a half before dinner time, and then it cooks it, and it's ready, and it's all on your smartphone, your iPhone. I admit they're expensive at $300, because really, frankly, the Anova, which will probably be on Black Friday sale at about $100, works perfectly well.
Yeah,
but this is
going to say it's
kind of cool.
It's already on sale at Amazon for $93, $94.
That's when I bought my Anova, and I use both.
Yeah,
but there's some things that are really cool about this. For instance, salmon. You know, it'll keep it chilled. You wouldn't want to leave it in a sous vide bath and turn on this. I mean, this is the way to do it.
Yeah. I've often thought that they need to make a really small one just for eggs. Like, I'd
this
be really
is the
okay
best.
With it.
I have one eggs. Of the first things I did. And eggs you don't eggs need to put so in a vacuum bag.
Yeah, you just drop them in.
You just drop them in. Well, you'll see on Saturday I made soft-boiled eggs.
I make them often that way. They're just
so great.
Perfect. I have those. You remember those little martini glasses that I have?
Yeah.
The little ones that I You
put an egg in there
and put a little salt on it.
Love it,
truffle salt that we talked about earlier.
Watch on Saturday because I also we taped it already because nobody wanted to work on Thanksgiving. But I brought my childhood egg cup that I used to eat soft boiled eggs in.
Oh, nice.
There's one left, and I brought it and Megan vouched for it. And on this, you get to choose between how do you want the yolk? Creamy, velvety, custardy?
You get
to choose.
But this is a very expensive show.
Don't buy it. I'm telling you, it's too expensive, but it sure is great. And
but it's beautiful.
It has a scale built in, so when you put something in, it goes, oh, you put something in. What is it? What would you like me to do with it?
Right. Yeah.
If it were any closer
Andy.
Future... I will accept the blame because if this were any closer to the future that we imagined when we were kids, there would be like all it's missing are like two like cartoon like robot arms with big white gloves that like take the egg and crack it that and then put themselves
like
back into a drawer.
Yes,
it's actually really fun. I haven't tried the microwave burrito in it yet, although Andy tells me it's very good.
I had frozen. It's how I cook like frozen. I do have some convenience meals. I try not to. You know, I have to have them in the fridge just in case. But I have a General Chow's chicken like frozen up, and then instead of like putting them in the microwave or whatever, again you just sous vide them, and if they come up, anything that does not have to be crisp is almost always going to be perfect.
Yeah.
And the great thing about the Mellow is that I find that for me, it's not so much the cooking time and the preparation time that gets me. It's the fact that that before sous vide, I would have to do all the cooking right before I eat.
Right.
And the last thing I wanted, and I would much rather just sort of like show up for dinner and find that someone has already done the cooking for me. And that's pretty much what sous vide is like.
You still have for a lot of these things, you'll want to brown them in some way. And I had some suggestions for that.
They're not closing it. I find it interesting that they're not closing it.
Well, that's weird. They provide you with Ziploc bags that you could, but you know, I have this is another product. If you really want to go crazy, the VacMaster. VP219, baby.
Wait,
it's the Mack truck of vacuum sealers.
All my money.
It's more
all
than
my money.
I saw that. Okay, I have to admit, I didn't know I had any limits, and the VacMaster, and I went, oh, I need to get one. I looked at it a little more, like,
no, you don't.
I'm gonna knock.
Yeah,
you don't. I backed away. I actually stepped away from the credit card. You know,
come over and you can use it.
My limit.
Come over, you can use it. I have the VP215. It's only $1,000.
But is it great?
Here's what it is.
You can buy an iPhone for that.
You mentioned that, oh, I've also bought, I'm all in, I bought a vacuum sealer, and I'm thinking, oh, that one of those really cool, like, $60 food sealers I got.
No.
I realized, my God, he bought the one that's in the Chopped kitchen. Oh, my God.
But it's amazing, isn't it?
So, and you get the special bags, and you put it in, And what it is it's a chamber sealer. It's a chamber vacuum. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, it's chemistry. You put it in there, you close the lid, and you don't have to hold the lid down because immediately it creates enough of a vacuum. The lid's sealed. You couldn't open it if you wanted to. And it goes for a minute, sucks all the air out of it. And the best parts are the sounds. And then at the end of it, it goes, and the lid opens because there's no more vacuum and it's done and it's perfectly sealed. And it's actually great for
you. You just have a roll of.
No, I didn't. You can get individual bags. I just get
it. And how does it seal the bags?
It has a heat sealer. So the lip of the bag goes on a bar that will get hot after it sucks all the air out. Then it seals the bag. And like for freezing stuff, for cheese, like I get big chunks of cheese. I get big blocks of cheese and cut it up and put it in the fridge. Right. And because there's no oxygen, stuff lasts forever. No freezer burn.
You seal up leftovers. They last several extra days. I buy fresh meat that never go into the freezer, but it will last a few extra days. For me, because I want someone else. I don't want to cook meals. I want someone else to cook meals and serve it to me, but I can't hire somebody to do that for me. So, like, if I'm home on Sunday, it will be just like my grandma's house, like at my place every Sunday, because I've got a couple of pots of like beans and rice going. I've got some pasta going. I've got some steaks going, so that by 2 or 3 o'clock, I will have one really good meal on the day. But then I will have vacuum sealed like almost the equivalent of like 5 Lean Cuisines of homemade food, of things that are already cooked and vacuum sealed in bags. All I have to do is put it in the sous vide.
Yeah.
Still even better.
I'll sous vide it first, then put it in the fridge, and it's still good a couple of days later, or freeze it. So it's already been sous vided. And then you could sear it or whatever. And I got the other thing I got.
It'll go into the sous vide twice. You got the Searzol.
I have a Searzol. That's not so expensive. I got a Solaire grill. So the Solaire grill is like a giant Searzol. So the idea of the Searzol is that you have a butane torch, like brazing torch that plumbers would use. And then you have attached to it the Searzol device, which heats up a metal plate. And you're cooking it, you're searing it with radiant heat instead of flame. Well, that's how this grill works. It's a gas grill, but instead of flame, it heats up ceramic plates to 1,000 degrees. Then you take your sous vide turkey or chicken or steak, you put it in there for 1 minute.
Right.
It's like done.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly seared.
Is that inside or outside? There's a portable one, right?
They have them inside. They have them outside. There's desktop. I got one that looks just like a gas grill, basically, but you can get a cart model.
I'm looking for an electric one that'll do that. But
you need the gas. And this just uses propane tanks, although you can, plummet to your natural gas if you wanted to make it part of your kitchen.
Right. Oh, they have solar infrared gas. Oh, infrared.
This is all infrared. But it's still a gas grill. Because you can't, electricity wouldn't heat it up fast enough, but the gas does.
Yeah.
You know, 3 minutes, it takes 3 minutes to get it to 1,000 degrees. It takes a minute to cook the steak on each side.
Yeah, my grill.
5 minutes later.
The grill at my house gets to about 650 degrees, and that's not quite.
No, this is 1,000. I'm telling you, come over. Come over. We'll vac master. We'll solar. By the way, I did not bring the solar or the vac master into the new screensavers.
If I bought the solar, my wife would be like, there is already a grill built in.
Well, I have a big green egg, too.
I know.
And I have to say, we did it. We did ribeyes. And the big green egg's better because you get that smoky flavor. But you have to, put coal in and fire it up. And
I still use the big green egg for the... Well, I love
the big green egg.
Beer butt chicken.
Yeah, nothing like it.
Yeah.
Beer butt chicken's the best.
You can't really...
I just realized how easy it is to cook an entire meal using techniques that none of which my mother would...
Isn't that interesting?
Recognize.
See, for me, the rule is for me when I buy something is like, this is going to be a conversation piece when my friends come up. You're like it's not just that I want to cut it up. It's like that we're going to talk about it.
Just bring in an audio recording of the vac master. It's extremely satisfying. I don't know if it's $1,000 satisfying, but it's extremely satisfying. Anybody has a deer they want to cut up or whatever, I got the vac master. Yeah, you're right. It's probably what they use on those.
It does make a difference when the vacuum sealing is easy. Like I have a cheap.
I have
a cheap little vacuum sealer. I had an industrial one and I lost it in some move.
I buy bags 1,000 at a time.
I know, and then you just do a whole bunch of them and you get everything out. Like it's like everything a Saturday sealed. Morning. You put a whole bunch of stuff in the freezer. Like I buy whole whole filet mignons at like
perfect,
and then you cut them all up, and perfect. It's so much cheaper that way.
Absolutely,
and then you put the different things in them, and you write on the outside. I put this on it, and I use this salt, and then I did you know whatever, and then you throw them into the freezer, yep. And then you're good to go.
And now I'm hungry.
Oh, I'm hungry.
Thank you, everybody.
Right now,
we do Mac Break and Sous Vide Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC.
Wait, Renee, are you using sous vide yet?
I have everything packed away right now, but I do have a sous vide.
Because you're the odd man out here,
no,
you know. Like,
yes. No, I do. No, I bought two of them. Well, mine hasn't. My one Leo just described hasn't shipped yet, but I have the.
You bought the Mellow.
Wow. Yeah, same day you did. Andy got us both. Boom, boom. Quick succession.
Wow. Well, and that's why for a long time I put off sous vide because I thought I'm getting the Mellow. Yeah. But after waiting for 2 years, I finally said, I better get an A-Nova.
you know what's next for you, though?
What?
Centrifuge. Think centrifuge.
Ooh, what can I do with that?
I just want to cook with the power of the sun.
You can extract the essence of things by spinning them. Spinning them really, really fast.
Oh, I wouldn't mind a centrifuge. Yeah. I have a whole lab. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lab in the pantry with all this stuff
centrifuge.
On there.
Just do a little research.
A dehydrator, too. There's nothing better. You take a pineapple and you dehydrate it. Oof.
Alex, you're like one of those music fans that stopped listening to R.E.M. everyone started listening to R.E.M. It's like, oh, people, Andy Leo doing sous vide. What's the next thing after sous vide? So I can.
Not only did I stop listening to it, I used to be the music director for an alternative rock station. like it was my job to know what was coming up next.
Beef Team gives the Solaire a thumbs up. Beef Team is actually works at, I think it's Purdue, right? He's in the agriculture department there, teaching people how to make better beef.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he knows what he's talking about. He says Solaire's good, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you so much for being here. We will be back next week, as I said. If you want to watch live, please do. But join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv if you do, because it's fun to be part of that community. You can also watch the shows on demand at twit.tv/mbw. Subscribe so you get it every single episode. You'll find Andy Iannocco at the Chicago Sun-Times. His website, cwob.com. He also does a Material Android podcast on Relay.fm. It's all about
bringing
Android.
Down the state from within. Don't tell anybody.
And now that Renee's using the Pixel 2 XL, maybe we can get him to do a Android podcast. You should get him on Material. iMore.com, where he covers all the great stuff, including Pokemon Go and Apple and Mac and all that stuff. And probably fidgets as well. You can also hear his great podcasts at every.
Doing a daily show now, Leo. God help me.
What?
Vector every day.
Oh my! I didn't realize Vector was daily.
No, I brought it back, and now it's like so. Today we have Dan DeSilva. Tomorrow we have Don Melton. The next day we have
too much
the analyst
stuff.
Ian Dawson. I mean, it's just
you can't not do it every day.
We'll see if I live. Yep. We'll see if I live.
Yep. And of course, Alex Lindsay. He's at the Pixel Core. The best thing to do with Alex here is follow him at. Alex Lindsay, LINDSAY on the Twitter, because he'll announce whatever's going on. Open for memberships?
No, we're not open for membership. We're looking really closely at Patreon because they've added a whole bunch of things.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah, it's just an.
That's a better way to do it.
There was a bunch of things that were missing from Patreon.
Yeah.
And then they added most of those in and an API. And so now we kind of feel like that's a better solution for us. And so we're trying to work through that right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in. In Delhi next week. So if you're from Delhi, poke.
And if you see a chicken tikka masala maker,
you know they don't that's an English dish. It's an English dish.
What, they don't make it in India?
I think you might be able to. It's not an Indian dish. That's a London dish. Yeah,
it's butter chicken.
Mm. Butter chicken. None of that's Indian.
No,
bring
that's
me
all English.
Most of Chinese food.
I actually can't eat Indian food very well.
Not like, from India.
I work in India occasionally, and I can't process it. Like I just it's the oils or the spices or something.
The ghee.
But it's
the ghee.
I love the ghee.
I
make
what
my
it
own
is,
ghee.
Is
ghee is a very useful
clarified
thing.
Butter.
Yeah, you got to have clarified butter if you're cooking.
No, I don't think that's it. Anyway, I don't know what it is, but I can't.
Well, have fun in Delhi.
I will.
That sounds awesome.
The pollution index is a little high right now. I'll be working.
That's right. Delhi's the one that's
it's
worse
going down.
Than Beijing.
It's going down, but you track it when you're going. And I thought I was looking at the wrong chart. Like I was like, it was 650.
It's off the books.
It was like 650. And I was like, 650. Isn't that the one that's supposed to not go above 50? And it's getting down. It's down to 300 and something. It's down.
It's okay. A friend of mine spent like a week and a half there and was wearing one of those like air face masks. And when he got home, he was able to like take that mask to a metal recycler and made enough money back to pay for almost the whole trip.
It was loaded with silver.
Yeah.
Do you wear a breezer?
I have. It hasn't been this bad before. So I'm not going to spend much time outside. I'm working. So it's not like I'm sightseeing. I'm going to be in buildings the whole time.
All right. Well, have a great trip and come back soon.
But I'm probably going to try to do some kind of get together.
In Delhi.
So nice. So I'm in.
Is it New Delhi or Old Delhi?
It's new. Oh, I don't know. It's Delhi. I don't understand the whole thing. And I say Mumbai, and then my Indian partner says, "That's just Bombay."
We call it Bombay here in India.
So confusing.
Yeah.
So anyway.
All right. Well, say hi to Modi for me. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time. But now, I'm sorry to say, it's time to get back to work, because guess what? Break time is over.